Welcome to Car Stuff, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. Hello and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm your host, Scott Benjamin, and today we're going to do something just a little bit different. We've had a new rebirth of Car Stuff here, and I've only heard me on the microphone, and it's been a little bit awkward, I'll be honest with you. I've been trying my best to kind of get the hang of this, this monologue versus a conversation, because, you know, if you're a longtime Car Stuff listener, you know that, you know, Ben and I had this show going together for a long, long time, and it was a good conversation, a back and forth talk that we had every week for a good 9 years, I think. It was great. I mean, we had a lot of fun, and we were able to, I think we made the best out of each show. We were able to, you know, really kind of draw from each other and kind of play off each other and make things work. And it just wasn't working out for me in the early part of this, the first few episodes. And I tried and I just never got it. And I found a way, I think, around this. And I've got somebody here to help me out today that I think you guys are going to like a lot. He's my producer. His name is Kurt Guerin. And Kurt is staring at me right now from across the table, in Ben's old seat, I guess. And Kurt, and you and I have done a couple of episodes of another show called The Fast Track already. But no one here on Car Stuff quite knows you yet if they're not a listener of The Fast Track as well. So, Kurt, tell us just a little bit about yourself. It doesn't have to be anything too in-depth, and I'll help you along here as we go, because I know it's a little bit awkward to introduce yourself and talk about yourself. Let us know just a little bit about you. You're into cars, right?
My interest in cars is a bit different from yours, Scott. I'm more of a fan of the design of the cars. Mm-hmm. I'm more of an observer. I'm not mm-hmm. necessarily a driver, although, you know, I put around town in my car every day. Yeah. I'm not a guy that's going to go out to the racetrack and race my car around. However, I did race bicycles for a time.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's how I got my racing fix.
So you're a bike guy?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? There's a huge tie-in between auto manufacturers and bicycle manufacturers.
Most definitely.
In the history of cars. So that's something that we can definitely talk about in the future. But I know that, you know, I think you're selling yourself a little bit short here on this. I think that you know more than you're letting on, because you and I talk off air a lot. I mean, we have a lot of conversations that are not behind the microphone. Mm-hmm. And I think you're holding back on me. I think you're sandbagging. Because you had a BMW for a while.
Yeah.
You don't drive that anymore. You drive something else now. But you had a BMW for a while. You've had an interest in cars. I think you know more about cars than you're letting on.
Yeah.
I really do. And we'll find that. We're going to draw that out of you. And the good part about this show, about Car Stuff, is that this conversation goes so many different directions. You know, Car Stuff is about a little bit of everything. It's not just automobiles, as you know. It's about planes, trains, boats, you know, anything, floats, flies, the tagline that we use now, but just about anything that, you know, is a form of transportation or, you know, mechanical in any way. We love to talk about that stuff. And I think you're going to fit right in with this. And I know you will, because, what we talk about off air is right along the lines of exactly what we do here on Car Stuff. So I think our listeners are going to enjoy hearing your voice not only on this episode, but in the future. And I'm happy to have you because it does kind of smooth out all of this. And I'm talking just me right now, so I don't know what I'm thinking. But, it's just a whole lot easier when you've got someone to talk to across the table than, if you're trying to do this all yourself and keep the conversation going. So I really appreciate you being here with me. And I know you're going to grow into this role flawlessly. I think it's going to work out really well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. And you know what? And we have already, like I said, we've already recorded a few episodes of The Fast Track where you're on air. We're already, you know, published and everything. So if if listeners want to go over there and listen to that, it's, you can do that. It's thefasttrackshow.com. And you can check out our podcast there as well. So let's move on to today's topic. How about that?
Sounds good.
All right. So let's. This is interesting. We in the time that we were off, you know, there's an early point when a podcast is going to come back that they leak a little bit of information out and say, hey, you know, maybe the show is going to come back in the near future and maybe drop a little bit of interest, right? Well, some of our previous listeners heard about that and they wrote in. They were excited about it, which I'm super glad to hear from some of our listeners from the past. One of them was Josh Baker. Now, Josh Baker is somebody who has been writing to Car Stuff for, seems like a decade now, at least, if not longer. And Josh wrote in with this really long list of great topics that he had been thinking about ever since we went off air back in 2017, and has some fantastic ideas. And one of the ideas that I picked for early on here in this series is to cover the outrageous 1970s hot rods as a topic. And I thought, okay, well, that's interesting. And I knew that there were some, you know, and I remember seeing a few. And, you know, I knew that that era was something special, I guess, for hot rods, something different, I should say, because every era, every decade has its own kind of look and feel. But I never really, like, dug deeply into some of the crazier 1970s hot rods, and there are some ridiculous hot rods, and I'll call them ridiculous. You know, I don't mean to be disparaging to them, but I'm going to call them some funny names here today, and I think you probably will too, because they're not like,
they're ridiculous, but they're also iconic. They're definitely, when you look at a lot of these vehicles, you see the 70s all in the little details of the cars.
Oh, absolutely. The colors, the use of materials.
Yeah, the upholstery, everything is kind of got that funky 70s feel to it.
Oh, sure. And, of course, they were all photographed during that time, so they're going to have, you know, models with them that, you know, exemplify that era as well. And, you know, it's interesting because, I think every era has its own look and feel. And, of course, you know, there were the big fins in the 1950s, and then there's the 1960s, which were, like, very, I think they were heavily influenced by space,
space travel age.
And space age. Yeah. And, you know, everything had a dome top and had, you know.
They had rounded glass windows.
And sure. Yeah, they look like spaceships on the ground, really.
Definitely.
And then the 1970s, we'll talk about those in just a minute. And then, of course, the 1980s had its own look, and the 1990s. You know, it progresses with every decade, as you would expect. But there were some customizers out there that just went completely off the deep end, really.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at some of these, and I'll mention some names here, and some of these names are going to be familiar to you. Some of them are not going to be familiar to you. So there's, of course, we have to mention the big one first, George Barris. George Barris is a big one. We'll talk about specifics with George Barris in just a moment, and a couple of others as we go through this list. But I want to mention a few. There's Chuck Miller. There's Ray Farner. There's Ed Big Daddy Roth, who we did an entire Car Stuff episode on many years ago. Dean Jeffries is another one. And then there's Bob Reisner. And then there's a guy named Bill the Lead Slinger Hines, which I think is a cool nickname, the Lead Slinger Hines. And, of course, you know, there's many, many others. There's so many big names that go along with these. And, of course, they're all custom designs. They're all one-of-a-kind typically. There might be, you know, some situations where there was a second one made in order to travel in a show or something maybe. But really, most of them were all custom-made. They were all individual one-of-a-kind pieces that, you know, would tour with Autorama or, you know, some show like that, or would just be simply for a magazine cover. And, you know, would get the press that they needed, get the name out there, get, you know, the notoriety. And, you know, the shop would get, you know, whatever kind of publicity that it could from that. So would the manufacturer. So would, you know, the suppliers that help put together the interior or help, you know, chrome the pieces or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what that was all about. They were really trying to just get their name out there and become a popular name in this kind of hot rod culture. And I do want to say this. Now, you're a fan of American Graffiti. I know that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so in American Graffiti, now there's some really cool-looking cars.
Yeah.
But they're fast, too. They're fast. They're driven by high school kids, you know, that are like slightly modified, not slightly, but they're modifying the cars in a way that's not like what we're talking about here with these hot rod modifications, these custom builders. Because this is another ballpark.
These are more like, you know, wacky visual pieces. The car is a work of art, and not in the traditional sense of how older cars used to be. These are exaggerated, wacky designs that are supposed to give you a certain emotion.
Well,
For example, when you look at the Batmobile, the original Batmobile that Barris did,
mm-hmm.
you don't see the car that it came from. You see the Batmobile, and it has a unique look to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like the same feeling you get when you see a 1957 Chevy or something like that.
Okay, that's exactly what I mean. There's a difference between hot rods that are made by people in their own garage, you know, mm-hmm. like between something that someone modifies to be kind of a cool street car. And, of course, it's a hot rod. It's got chrome wheels. It's got chrome exhaust, chrome engine, all that stuff. And, you know, the interior's matching the exterior and it paints beautiful, you know, all that. It's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
What these guys did, what, you know, the list of names that I just read and some of the others that we'll talk about, what they did with a hot rod was something off the deep end. It was a complete, it's like a rolling, you said a rolling work of art. I guess that's a way to put it, but it, to me, and in a lot of cases this actually happened, but like a Hot Wheels car in real life.
Yeah.
You know, like just that, yeah, that insane design that you would never think you would see on the road. It, just a one-off car, like the, it's just it, one-of-a-kind custom design that has, you know, the look and feel that exemplifies that era that it was built in. And I think that these cars that we're going to discuss today, I've got a list here in front of me, and a few of them that I've have a little bit of personal experience with, believe it or not, and if you can call it that, that I think it's fascinating. And hopefully, I say this for every episode, and you'll find this, Kurt, as we go through and record more and more of these episodes, is that I always encourage our listeners in Car Stuff to investigate things further. So let's say that, you know, you and I are talking about these hot rod show cars from the 1970s, and we mention a specific one, and I'll tell you the very first one we're going to talk about without talking about it yet. We're going to talk about the Red Baron car.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Baron car is something really unique, and you have to, you kind of have to see it in order to understand what we're going to talk about. We'll try, you know, theater of the mind. That's the important part here, right?
Yeah.
Well, we'll do our best, but you have to see it in order to understand. And when we get to some of these others, and I'm laughing already because some are so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Some are so absurd that you absolutely have to see them to understand what we're talking about. And I'll try my best to describe them.
Yeah. I mean, some of these, they put like lawn furniture as the seats in the car and like toilets as the driver's
yes.
seat. It's not yes. like what you would think of as being an actual car. I mean, it has four wheels on it.
Yeah.
But it's almost like it has different elements built into it that are interesting and that you can look at and say, whoa, that's a lawn furniture is a driver and passenger seat. That's,
yeah.
that's interesting. What were they thinking?
It's interesting, but, you know, I'll just say it. It's interesting, but stupid.
And not it's not utilitarian.
No, and I don't mean to be too harsh on these because I know that, you know, looking back, you know, you could look at these designs and say that they're gaudy and they're garish and they're outrageous and all that. But, you know, at the time, people kind of looked at them like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's a funky design. I like it. I like that, you know, they're kind of bucking the system. They're going their own way with this.
You yeah.
know? Like it was the feel of the time. It was, you know, what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And even so, I still think that guys like Barris and Big Daddy Roth, and I think they were still, of course, they were pushing the limit. They were making things just absurd
yeah.
in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing it on purpose to elicit that emotion from people. Because otherwise, who's going to pay attention to it?
Yeah.
No one's going to bother to come and see your car at the Autorama show if it's at the – I said that weird, didn't I? If you come to the Autorama show – I don't know how to say that now. That's weird. One of those words, like, I don't know where the emphasis should be on that syllable. But if you say the, you know, you're going to have the Autorama show in Detroit, or you're going to have it in Chicago or somewhere, how are you going to draw a crowd if you don't have anything that's more than just like a pedestrian version of what you see your neighbor building in his garage?
Yeah. And what I find is these particular cars, they draw you in from afar. You say like, whoa, look at that thing.
Yeah.
And then when you get close into it, you notice other little details that are interesting too.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And that's something that they really did. They paid attention to every little tiny detail. And that's pretty important in these. And I don't know if we're going to really, like, really get deep, deep, deep into that. But I do want to describe some of these cars and maybe get some people to go and look at some photos of these cars with us as we talk about them. And maybe we can do that in the next segment because we are going to take a break right now. And we're back, and you're listening to Car Stuff, and I'm your host, Scott Benjamin, along with Kurt. Kurt, you're here still.
I'm still here.
You hung around. You decided to stick around after the break.
Yep, hanging in there.
Fantastic. Thank you. I hope you continue to do that for the end of the show, and hopefully for many shows to come. Are you enjoying this so far?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. All right, well, let's see how this goes then. I'll see if I can push you to the limit. No, I'm not gonna throw any wrenches your way. Okay. So I think we left off saying that, you know, we had quite a list of customizers from the 1970s. A lot of people that were trying to make their name they already had made their name or were making their name in the world of customizing cars, but not in a way that, you know, you would do in your own garage. This is something that's above and beyond that, something outrageous. And I've got a list here of some cars. I told you the name of one already that, you know, it's called the Red Baron.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Baron is one hot rod that we're going to talk about. But there's a four or five or maybe even six that we want to talk about. Not so much in depth, but more just like I want people to be aware of them and maybe look at them as good examples of what the 1970s produced or what these people produced in the 1970s maybe. And Maybe just get a little bit of your feedback on these. And I will tell you this, that a couple of years ago, and I don't know if I ever got to mention this on Car Stuff because it was right around the time when we went off the air in the end of, at the end of 2017. It was close to that. I went to the Midwest on a trip, a little road trip. And I went to a place called the Speedway Motors Museum of American Speed, and it's in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I might have been able to mention, I think I did, now that I think about it, I think I said, this is kind of a hidden gem out here in the middle of nowhere, it seems like. I mean, it's not nowhere, but you know what I mean. It's unexpected where it is. So the Speedway Motors Museum of American Speed, and I've got, I guess maybe an interesting thing that I want to mention about that museum right now is that they have two of the hot rods that we're going to be talking about on display. And the, I mean, we're talking about the actual ones, the ones from the, you know, the magazine covers, you know, the ones that made the Autorama circuit. We're talking about the Red Baron and another one that we're going to talk about in just a moment called the Boot Hill Express. Those are both on display. And the Red Baron is something that came about, like many of these cars did, as Josh Baker pointed out in his letter to us, his email to us, that a lot of these cars actually started out as models or kit cars that, you know, children could put together on the desktop or, you know, adults, I guess, could put together on their tabletop and make a really cool-looking hot rod, but they were just a toy. You know, they started out as just a toy or even, you know, a Hot Wheels toy or something like that. But a lot of these started out as a model or a kit car. In fact, this one did. A scale model designer by the name of Tom Daniel, he conceived the Red Baron car for a company called Monogram. And if you know the Monogram company, they've produced a lot of fantastic car models over the years. And this was happening back in around 1967, I believe, when he conceived this whole idea. And the model kit was released in 1968, sold more than 2 million units. It was an extremely popular model at the time. So Mattel decided that they were going to jump on the bandwagon as well. Mattel decided that they were going to build a Hot Wheel car of this as well. So if you can find a Red Baron Hot Wheel car, I think it's worth a decent amount of money at this point. It's kind of a collector's item. I don't know so much about the Monogram model because so many were produced, but I think if you can find one of the Hot Wheels cars, they are worth something at this point. But a guy by the name of Chuck Miller at a place called Styline, I think it's called Styline Customs, he decided that he was going to build a full-size Red Baron car, which I think is a cool idea, you know, to be able to look at a model car on the shelf and say, you know what, I want to drive that for real. I want that to be a real thing. But he was going to pay $10,000 in order to build this car, to have it built. And this is back in, again, the late 1960s. The original car, there's a little bit of variance in this car because the original kit car, the model car, came with what would be a 1914 Mercedes-Benz inline six-cylinder engine that was from a Fokker airplane. And so, obviously, there's not a whole lot of those available. Not a lot of them on the market, not easy to find. So what they did was they got a 1968 Pontiac overhead cam six-cylinder engine, and that's what powers the Red Baron. And this car, if you've ever seen it, it's really remarkable, and it's a strange, it's an interesting design, I think, and it's one of the cooler looking hot rods. I think it kind of stands up to the test of time. Like, I think this would be a cool hot rod to see on the road today.
Definitely.
I don't feel like this one has like that bizarre 70s, late 60s, early 70s feel to it. This one, it's definitely wild. It's definitely out there. But there's something about this that is still like still timely, you know?
This one seems like it was maybe built in the late 60s, early 70s, but the design kind of feeds off of that World War I era.
Sure.
You know, it has the helmet and the Iron Cross on the side.
Yeah.
A spike on the top of the helmet.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like even though it was built in the 70s or late 60s.
Late 60s, early 70s, yeah.
The design of it was conceived years before that.
Well, you know, just to show you how long this design did hold up and people were still interested in seeing this thing, it did tour the country as part of the traveling Autorama show. It stayed with the show until the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
So it did hold up and then it was retired from service and that's when it went to live at the Speedway Motors Museum that I was talking about, the Museum of American Speed. But it's a really, really cool car. I think if you get a chance, look it up online. It's called the Red Baron Hot Rod. It's probably one, you know, I would think that most people have probably already seen this. You might not know what it's called. You might say like, oh, I remember that from when I was a kid. I built that model or I saw that Hot Wheels or I saw a magazine cover in some automotive shop or something that had that on it. You know, but it was something that was around for decades. For some reason, that one held up. And we're going to talk about some that do not hold up for sure. The next one I think is on the border, I guess, maybe. This one, I don't know if it does or not. It's the Boot Hill Express. And again, this one lives at the same museum that I'm talking about in Lincoln, Nebraska, the Museum of American Speed. And it's based on, this is a really interesting one. This is built by Ray Farner. It's based on the 1850s funeral coach that supposedly carried an actual James Gang member named Bob Younger to his grave, which I think is pretty cool. I mean, if this is real, I mean, I don't know the validity of that statement. I don't know if this is the actual stage. What do you think? Do you think there's any truth to that, or do you think that this is someone pulling a fast one?
I feel like it might maybe a little bit of a fast one.
You do?
Yeah, but it definitely has that look. I mean, yeah, it looks like it could have been pulled by a horse.
I mean, if nothing else, it's a perfect recreation of it. But there are many scale models that were made, of this thing, of course. But it's probably one of the crazier creations that were ever made or developed in this time frame as well, because it's just such a strange thing, right, to take an 1850s funeral coach and create a hot rod out of it. I mean, who would ever think of that? But then again, this list, who would ever think of taking, okay, I'm going to mention one that we're not going to go too deep into here, but who would ever think of taking an outhouse and making that into a hot rod? Someone did.
Yeah.
There's one called the outhouse rod, and the outhouse rod is exactly what you would think it is. It looks like a Model T, bucket, hot rod or whatever, but it looks like an outhouse on wheels. It's ridiculous. We had just a brief conversation about this one in particular, in that these aren't just your ordinary, I'm going to put gold rims on something or chrome rims on something or I'm not going to, jack it up or lower it or whatever. This is a statement. This is like somebody's personality in some way, as you put it.
Mm-hmm.
This is somebody's personality they're trying to not force on you, but trying to tell you something with their design.
They're yelling it at you with these types of designs. A lot of people with their cars, they put subtle touches there that make you say like, oh, that's cool. But these are basically in your face. This is what I'm saying.
I see that. Okay, I see what you're saying, and I get it. And I understand what you're talking about when you look at maybe like the cars of like Ed Roth. Mm-hmm. You look at some of those, and those some of the crazy creations that he had, and they were interesting. But like, what do you do when you've got an outhouse car? Like, what's that personnel? And I know you don't, and I don't either. I don't have the answer to that. But what is someone's personality when they are again screaming at you? Here's my creation, but it's an outhouse on a hot rod chassis.
I don't know.
It's weird.
It's just it's that far out mindset of the late 60s bleeding over into the 70s. Where do you go after the 60s?
I guess so.
Go to an outhouse hot rod.
I guess so. And it's funny because, to each his own, right? I mean, it's fine. The person wants to build it. Fantastic. And it's an interesting looking hot. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's beautiful, but that's just me. Some people might think it's beautiful. It's different. It's unique, of course.
Yeah.
It's probably fast, if I had to guess. It looks fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a giant chrome engine in the front of it.
Yeah.
I don't know what the engine is, but it's huge. I don't know. These are just so fast. Like, all of them are fascinating. One to me that I don't know if I will ever get this one. And this is the next one on our list. This is one that you absolutely have to look up in order to understand what we're talking about. Or you can try if you want. If you're driving in your car, you can try to understand. It's called the bathtub rod. There's a couple versions of this. There's the bathtub rod, and then there's also another car that's called the bathtub buggy. Now, the bathtub rod was built by a guy named Rob Reisner in 1968. So, again, this is the late 60s, kind of bleeding over into the 1970s, but carried on through the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
The bathtub buggy was a sort of similar bathtub hot rod that was built by George Barris.
Mm-hmm.
And Barris, I think, was also promoting the Rob Reisner car. And this is where the connection is made here. So he's kind of promoting the bathtub – I'll try to keep these straight – the bathtub rod – by Reisner, and he's at the same time builds the bathtub buggy himself as kind of his own expression of the same thing, whatever that thing is. Now, that we're getting back to what are you doing with this car, George? Why are you building this? When you look at these designs, and I'll maybe you should describe them.
Well, I'll try to.
Okay.
The bathtub rod, from what I remember, you have two bathtubs at the back. That's the passenger seats, and then a toilet for the driver's seat.
Toilet.
Kind of yellowish upholstery in there. So it's real funky.
Yeah. And it's quilted. Quilted upholstery.
Yeah.
And but the seats, like, okay, so you're laying down in a bathtub in the back as like a left and rear passenger. It's a three-seater car, really, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah.
It has lots of gold on it. Mm-hmm. Of course, the driver, as you said, is sitting on a throne, sitting on a toilet, right, with lots of upholstery, and then the engine, which is it's a twin blown engine. And I think it's like a big Chrysler, a big Hemi engine or something. It's enormous. And the exhaust pipes, of course, are something spectacular looking as well. You know, they've really done a lot of work on this. But they run the full length of the car on both sides, laid out in order, in line. So you have to step over them. I don't know how you would ever get over these pipes without burning your legs. I don't think there's any way. You probably have to get into and out of the car through the back, if I had to guess. Just, it's the most bizarre looking thing. Now, they're gold rims. It definitely looks like just like a hot rod chassis with a couple of bathtubs and a toilet strapped to it.
Yeah.
It's that easy, but I mean it's much more ornate than I'm giving it credit for. It's got a lot of things going on for it, and not all good, of course. You know, I don't think so. I don't think that they're all good. And I've recently seen that this car turned up at a swap meet or something, or someone's garage maybe. There's an article, and I don't have it in front of me right now, and I'll try my best maybe in a future episode to come up with this. But somebody has found this car, and it's fallen apart. The upholstery's decaying, and you know, it looks like the paint. There was at some point paint on the side of the bathtubs. That's kind of faded and gone away, and you know, it's just the chrome is all tarnished, and it's kind of a mess. Mm-hmm. Someone has taken that car and they're trying to restore the car to its original glory, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. That's good.
It's bathroom glory.
A lot of these, I mean, the Red Baron car is beautiful still.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's one that stayed in museums. And
sure. And you know, this one, and I'll tell you that I feel like this car, it's interesting, and it'd be cool to own something that's unique, one of a kind like this. Is it better off in a museum, or is it better off? I mean, I don't know if there's even a better off, but is it better off like touring with like a modern version of the Autorama? Is it, should it make a show circuit? Should it be even, I don't think that it would be on car covers anymore. We just don't do this kind of thing anymore, really.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some obscure car magazine out there that would feature it, but not anymore. And that's what these were originally intended
for. There's people that'll remember magazines. And
yeah. And I know they're still there. I mean, you go to the bookstore, you go to even the grocery store or whatever, you still see them on the rack.
They're still there.
Yeah.
But they're not, you know.
They're not flying off the shelf.
No. They used to, even 10 years ago.
Trust me. I was a kid that would wait in line, not wait in line, but I guess wait for them to put the the newest Trade and Times on the shelf, so I could check out what the tiny little postage stamp ads for cars that were for sale, even if I wasn't looking, because I was excited about reading that type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're spoiled now; we can go and see someone walking around all of these cars we're talking about with a camera. You used to have to, when you looked at it, if you didn't go in person, you would be looking and having to use your imagination, like what you thought.
Oh,
like
sure.
What you thought this car looked like on the inside based on what you can see from afar.
Sure.
I don't know. That was kind of the cool thing about it, too.
It's a different world.
Yeah.
Different world, man. And you know what? Maybe that's a future episode, too, of like how things have changed from that, because we are not going to the magazines anymore, check things out. We're not going to the Trade and Times and looking at print ads where the person who's selling a vehicle, you know, has three lines and they're using all those abbreviations. You remember all the little abbreviations for, power steering, power, power windows, whatever it was. They're not doing that anymore. Now they've got as much space as they want. They can show you 100 photos of the car if they want. You can request specific photos sent to you of that car. You know, it's all different.
Yeah.
I think that's a rich topic we can dig into.
Well, even with a lot of the fine tuning that we see on cars these days, didn't used to be like that.
Yeah.
And it might be because of that visual. Like now you can get up close to it and you can see a million pictures and videos and
more exacting standards.
It's kind of like how with nostalgia, you remember all the good things. All the fans of cars remember like how great cars used to be and how much better they used to be. But they forget crappy they were too, you know?
Yeah. I think back to, and I know we're off track here for a moment, but we'll get back. So yeah, I think you're exactly right, because I remember thinking back to my first car. And it was an old Trans Am, like a 1978 Trans Am. And it was, I mean, to be honest with you, it was a pile of crap. It was terrible, terrible car. A lot of things wrong with it. But I loved the car, and I would probably even buy that car back again if I could, just because of the nostalgia factor.
Sure.
And I know it would be ridiculous and it would be a mistake, but I look back at it and I think that that's something that I would like to do. And I think a lot of people have those rose-colored glasses when they look back at the past and decide, sure, I love my my 1971 Mustang back then. Would you love it just as much now as a daily driver? I mean, it might be a fun weekend car or something, but it's not what you thought it was.
Yeah.
You know, back then, it's different. It's different. And, you know, that's a good point. We should really delve into some of the stuff. We've got, there's a lot of material here that I think you and I can talk about in the future. So, so let's do it. And, but right now, you know what, let's delve back into some of these 1970s hot rods. How about that?
That sounds great. Which one's next?
Just a couple more. Let's talk about, how about the Munster Coach? A lot of people can, you know, remember the Munster Coach. I think this is a pretty cool car. Now, this is actually three Model T bodies that were put together to make a 133-inch frame, which is that's about 18 feet long. So it's a big, long car. Now, this is, of course, a George Barris build. Yeah. He built the Munster Coach. It was his idea. And in 1964, this is 1964, but it does carry over through the 1970s. The cost to build this first car was something like $18,000. Now, it does say first car, so I wonder what that means. If there were other versions of the Munster Coach along the way, or if they just simply built another one because it was a television car. It had things like blood red velvet interior. Of course, they used blood red. Mm-hmm. They said it took 500 hours to hand form the ornate rolled steel scrollwork that they used in this. Now, that's like 500 hours. I mean, imagine this. Okay, so 500 hours just for the steel work that they're doing in this car, right? They only had 21 days to complete this whole project. So essentially, they're rolling steel the whole time that project is going on while somebody else is doing the rest of the stuff. So it's got a little more power than you might think. It was powered by a 289 Ford Cobra engine from a 66 Mustang GT. They actually had a lot of performance parts, like a Stromberg carburetor. It had an Isky cam, racing headers from Bobby Barr. It had, you know, a lot of performance parts that they added to this thing. So it wasn't all just show. It wasn't like, you know, this is just a car built for the movie set and mm-hmm. didn't really do anything. This was a performer. It's a real car.
Well, I think even when they used it in the show, it was kind of funny when they would use it because it's like, wow, the monsters have a muscle car.
They would take it out to the, remember they took it to the drag strip? I know mm-hmm. they did. And, you know, of course, Herman Munster and Grandpa had his own car too, right?
He had Dragula.
Yeah, that's right, Dragula. Yeah, that was a cool car too. So that was a little different though. Yeah. That wasn't like the big stagecoach.
Yeah, that was a little coffin. Yeah,
and really cool looking too. There's one on the Barris site right now that is like, it looks like a wooden car, and I don't know if that's a current project they're working on or what, but they have a different name for that one too, like Ratula or mm-hmm,
something like that.
Yeah, but it's not the same thing as Dragula. Dragula was, of course, Grandpa Munster's car, and it had the bubble canopy like you had talked about before, right? Mm-hmm. And you lay in a kind of you lay down when you drive it, so your feet are in the, you're laying
like
down
coffin.
In the coffin, essentially, and you get your head sticking through the window. Giant engine up front, of course. There was a lot of metal. It was a fascinating looking car, and it was probably pretty fast, like the Munster's Coach was. I don't have the details on what that one was powered by or anything here in front of me, but all of them are fascinating cars. Now, another one that was not a Barris car is a car that was built by a guy named Dean Jeffries. And again, this is another late 1960s car that was something that was popular throughout the 1970s. That's why we're including it here. It was the Monkey Mobile. And the Monkey Mobile has its own little bit of history, which is pretty interesting. I have a good feeling that this is why Josh Baker wanted to hear about this one. I think he included this one on the list for a reason. He's a big GTO fan. And years and years, I've promised him that I'm going to do a GTO show, and I just have never done the GTO show. Josh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I know I'm using public airwaves to apologize to Josh, but I have for years told him we were going to do an in-depth look at the GTO, and we will. You and I,
and
Kurt,
talk about the judge and all that.
We will do that. Yes, you and I, Kurt, will. I'm saying it again. We'll do that. We'll do that at some point. But the basis for the Monkey Mobile, again, the idea of Dean Jeffries was to build a car for this new TV show called The Monkees. And of course, I think everybody knows The Monkees, the band. The mm-hmm. kind of what was the deal with them? Were they a real band or a fictional band? Because I think they're a real band.
They were a real band.
Well, they were on the radio, but did they like tour and everything, or was it made by the studio? Do you know?
There's albums are probably made by studio musicians.
Okay,
so they definitely were a real band. I think they could all play.
Is this like the first boy band without the dancing? Is that a good way to think of it?
Yeah, I mean,
it's like it's probably made by Hollywood, right? Like they brought these guys together.
Yeah,
I think. I don't know. Maybe it's something different.
Now, what was that movie that's not Walk the Line, but it's Dewey Cox is sitting there with the Beatles in India, and he says, "Man, I really like y'all's new album, man. Y'all are almost as good as the Monkees."
So that's pretty funny. Walk the Line is a Johnny Cash film.
Yeah, but then this one was Walk Hard or something.
Oh, something
it was like
okay.
the, the lampoon of the Johnny Cash.
That's
movie.
Funny. Well, I never.
That, when I think of the Monkees, I think of the beat. Like they are kind of like trying to feed off of the Beatles' popularity.
The sound, yeah, sure. The sound and the feel at the time. You know what's funny? I mean, I don't ever. I've never claimed to be a music person or anybody that like really is like into music or listens to music or anything like that. So it's funny to have.
Monkees have some great songs.
Yeah, I mean,
Daydream Believer.
I know them.
Classic.
I just don't know enough about them to talk about them in an educated way. So I apologize if I've really screwed that up, but what I'm thinking is that, you know, it just seems to me that these are like, it was like put together by Hollywood. It felt a little too perfect.
And yeah, you're right by saying that. I feel like they definitely were a fabricated group or handpicked at least. But as far as being musicians, I think they could play and they could sing.
Sure.
You know,
sure. Oh, they could. Yeah, of course. I'm not trying to downplay, you know, any kind of talent that they might have had.
Well, in fact, a lot of groups at that time didn't play on their albums.
Good point.
I know a lot of the Beach Boys records were, some of the parts were done by studio.
Oh, Kurt, you're
musicians.
Wrecking my childhood.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
But they'd still play shows. So.
No, I wasn't like a huge Beach Boys fan either. Don't worry. Anyway, let's move on. All right, so let's agree to this. I need to investigate the Monkees a little bit deeper and find out some more music history.
Sure.
How about that?
Sure.
Okay, we'll agree with that. All right, so here's the deal with the Monkee Mobile. They were looking for a car for this new TV show called The Monkees. And so Dean Jeffries, who is asked to kind of design and build this car, goes to a place called, it's a place called Model Products Corporation or MPC. And he tells the CEO of that company about this project and what, you know, he needs to do. And then that guy told his friend, and his friend's name is Jim Wangers, W-A-N-G-E-R-S. And this is where the GTO connection comes in, because Jim Wangers, I guess, is in development with Pontiac Promotion and Pontiac, the auto manufacturer, or the division of General Motors, I guess. And they, at the time, they have just launched the GTO, and they need to really promote it. And so this is a fantastic way for them to do that. And they supply, so Jim Wangers supplies Model Products Corporation, or MPC, two base model 389 four-barrel 1966 GTO convertibles. Pretty nice gift, huh?
Mm-hmm.
He supplies those to them and says, you know, here these have an automatic transmission. You can convert these into your Monkee Mobiles for your show. And they did so. And of course, later MPC is given rights to also create a scale model version of this, you know, for the show as well. Promotional materials that go along with it. And of course, they sold a pile of them. I think they sold, you know, we said the Red Baron kit sold 2 million.
Mm-hmm.
The Monkee Mobile sold 7 million. 7 million kits. And of course, you know, that type of exposure, because that was an important, well, not an important show, but it was a popular show, the Monkees. The Monkees show gave Pontiac the brand recognition for the GTO that they needed in order to sell the actual model itself, because people, they liked the car. They thought it was pretty cool. I mean, of course, it's a heavily modified version. It doesn't look a whole lot like the street version, but it's still an interesting way that they work together and, you know, able to sell the real deal and the scale model cars as
Yeah, it's like how it still has GTO badge on the grill and everything,
yeah.
But it's exaggerated front end of the GTO.
That's a good way to put it. It's almost like a caricature of itself,
yeah.
You know, and I think this thing didn't it have like a parachute to stop it and all kinds of crazy things. It had some almost Batmobile esque features to it, you know, and so in that they were a little bit absurd.
It was cartoony, but in real life, like even the header pipes where they come out from underneath the wheel wells,
yeah.
Kind of come out in a little different angles and kind of look a little off kilter.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, I mean, they did the hot rod treatment to it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they just gave it kind of the once over and made it look interesting and unique and cool, and people could, I guess, make the connection between the actual GTO and the Monkee Mobile in some way, and of course, they made the connection between the scale model kit. You know, which was wildly popular apparently, and it sold, gosh, even, I mean, think of what 7 million copies of those model kits would amount to in profit for the MPC after just kind of not falling into the deal, but just being in the right place at the right time,
yeah.
You know, and what a great deal. All right, so anyways, that worked out real well for everybody. The last one that I want to mention here, I think, in this segment, and then we'll have some stuff that we'll talk about it toward the end of the show here, too. But the last thing I want to cover right now is something called the Panther Mobile. And the Panther Mobile is another outlandish concept design. This is a car that was built in 1969, and it was built, again, right at the end of the 1960s. It was built by a guy named Bob Reisner of California Show Cars, and by another guy named Ed Newton, who went by the nickname of Newt, of course. There's a TV personality involved. The guy's name was Dan Woods, and then a couple of customizers. There's a guy named Joe Balian, and then Bill, this is where the Lead Slinger comes in, Bill the Lead Slinger Hines, and another guy named Bill Honda, of all things. I don't think there's any relation to Honda and Honda Motor Car there in that case. This is a car that was used in the Pink Panther movie in the title sequence and the original cartoon as well. So I don't remember this. I watched the Pink Panther cartoons. I, of course, watched the movies. I don't remember this car one bit. I don't remember anything about it. But when I look at it, I seem to remember seeing a magazine or something like that, you know, that included this car somewhere along the line in the past. It's one of these, of course, it's a television car, but it has notoriety that's almost, believe it or not, along the lines of the Batmobile, the Monkey Mobile, the Munster Coach, all those, the Red Baron. But I don't think that this one is as well known. I think, you know, they claim that it's as well known, but I just don't think it is. I don't think it's one that many people are too familiar with. It's very angular, very
it's like a little wedge design.
Yeah, it's a strange design. It's very pointy almost. Mm-hmm. You know, the car almost has a sharp look to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's different. It's not as rounded, it's not as smooth as some of the other ones we've seen. It's kind of taking the concept idea in a different direction.
Well, it's hard to tell what this car is based on.
Yeah.
By looking at it, you wouldn't see that it uses an Oldsmobile chassis.
As far as I know, and I don't know what parts were used for it. Of course, there is some kind of production car underneath there somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be. I don't think it was completely original. I don't think they built the frame up or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you this. I'll tell you that the Panther Mobile in 1976, if you want to go with 1976 dollars, and I don't know why they did this because it was built in 1969, but they're saying 1976. They said it was $100,000 to build this car. And so that's a lot, that's a significant amount over what we talked about with the, what was it, the Red Baron, right? Mm-hmm. Which was $10,000 to build, which is still expensive. But if you look at $100,000 in 1976, if you were to start from the ground up and build that car again in 2019, it would cost you nearly $500,000. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I don't see it.
Yeah, no.
I don't see spending $500,000 on that one.
No.
Now, there's a few other things that I would like to cover in just a moment, and I have some pop culture references maybe that we can talk about and some other things that we want to discuss, and we'll do that right after a break. And we're back, and you're listening to Car Stuff, and I'm your host, Scott Benjamin, along with Kurt Guerin here again. Kurt, still checking
still
in.
Still hanging in there.
All right. Okay. Well, you know what? We're nearly through the show, Kurt, and you've held on the whole time. That's fantastic. Yeah. You haven't fled the studio yet,
nope.
So maybe we can keep this going then. And maybe a couple hundred more shows.
For sure.
That?
Yeah. I need some practice, so let's do as many as you want to do.
You know what? If I need to stop for just a second then. I'm going to tell you something, and
that is, and
this is for everybody to hear. That if you go back, and I've said this so many times in the past, you go back to 2008 and you listen to the early episodes of Car Stuff when Ben and I first started, I was completely raw. Like, I had no idea what I was doing behind the mic. It was like early days, and it was really rough. So I think you're doing a fantastic job, and I think that our listeners are going to understand that for your debut on Car Stuff, you're doing a great job. I think so, anyway.
Well, thanks, Scott.
And hopefully we'll get some listeners to chime in with the same information. Of course, Kurt's going to be refining his craft here. I'm still working on getting back into the rhythm here. I'm feeling a little more loose now that we've got two of us here. One thing that I do want to bring up here is a couple more things that we wanted to talk about, and I don't know how much time we have really to spend on each one of these, but I thought that something that I could relate to, because I was fairly young. I was born in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
So I was born at the start of the era that we're talking about for all these hot rods.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time I was, 10 years old and kind of really interested in this type of thing, 8, 9, 10, going to these shows or reading the magazines or whatever, these cars had already been around for a decade. Where I had experience with the types of cars that we're talking about are cartoons of all places. And the cars that were used in these cartoons in particular in the 1970s just make me think of the ones that we've been talking about today.
Yeah.
These most of them are Hanna-Barbera designs and productions, I guess. They included a lot of hot rod type designs in their cars because that was kind of the pop culture thing to do at the time. And teens thought they were cool. And, it was just a cool thing to do. It was the West Coast thing to do. And that's where those studios were, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, of course, the Wacky Races. from 1968, and that was they had about 11 cars that were really these bizarre cars. But they look, if you look at the Wacky Races, the Wacky Races cars, and mm-hmm. you could buy a poster with all of them on it now, they look a lot like most of the cars that we've been talking about today. They're just that outlandish and that strange. There was, of course, Speed Buggy, which was in 1973. That's one I do remember. And, of course, the Wacky Races, too. Then think about this. You know, Scooby-Doo from the 1970s. I think everybody's familiar with Scooby-Doo, even now. Think about the Mystery Machine.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very 1970s custom van. There's that van trend, and it has the paint job just like it, you know, that rounded flower design on the outside and the colors that they used. And it's not a typical, it's not like a production van from some company. It's like a conglomeration of a bunch of things.
Yeah.
It's not one type of van. It's like it's a big mix of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that van points to the 1970s hot rods of the time, of course. There's also another, here's two of them that I had never really heard of. There's one called Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch. You ever heard of that one?
No.
I've never heard of Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch, but it's from 1974. And I guess Wheelie was a Volkswagen Beetle that was red. And it was actually the character. That was the character. This is kind of like a Herbie the Love Bug. You know, it was its own character. And the last one that I'll mention here is another one that I'd never heard of called Motor Mouse and the Auto Cat. You ever heard of Motor Mouse and the Auto Cat?
That doesn't ring a bell either.
No, I haven't either. That's strange. It's just such a strange. But the way it was described, and this sounds kind of funny, it's described as like Tom and Jerry with hot rods.
Okay.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Well, what kid wouldn't love watching that, right?
I mean, that
sounds like right along my line of interest right there. I don't know why I never tuned into, Motor Mouse and the Auto Cat.
Yeah.
It wasn't in my market, I guess.
Since you're talking about pop culture and things that came out around when you were a kid.
Yeah.
In the 80s, I remember things like the DeLorean from Back to the Future. And then the Ghostbusters car.
Oh, yeah. Is it Ecto-1?
Yeah.
Is that the car?
Yeah.
Some of those are just seared into your memory, aren't they? Like, I mean, they're so memorable. They're so recognizable. And you know what? People are still building hot rods. People are still doing this today. And it's taken a different turn, of course. And there's a lot of different, you know, looks for hot rods through the years, as we said, you know, going from the 1950s to 60s and then, you know, transitioning from each decade. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, a lot of what we talked about today has that overlap. It's the late 60s all the way through the 70s, and they even toured all the way into the 90s and then kind of went away.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the 80s, dependent on the design and, you know, longevity of, you know, the design itself. Like the Red Baron could kind of hang on, but maybe the Love Machine couldn't hang on quite that long.
Yeah.
Or the Pink Panther Mobile or, you know, whatever it was. but yeah, there's definitely a hot rod trend still happening today. And I feel like you and I could have a good conversation about hot rods now.
Mm-hmm.
And really make something of it. So do you want to talk about that maybe in a future podcast?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of places to go. We kind of touched on it at the beginning, like the difference between hot rods and then these other type of cars that are more outlandish in design.
Yeah, there's not nearly as much custom crazy chrome and electric paint work that's going on. You know, I don't think that's happening nearly as much as it was in the 1970s, but I do feel like there's still some of that going on. There's still some builders out there that are doing some crazy designs, some wacky designs, I guess, if you want to put it that way. Wacky. I mean, that's 70s term, right? But it's a little outlandish and kind of over the top. And I feel like you and I could probably dig up some of those and have a good conversation that people would like to listen to. So maybe we should do that.
Sure. I mean, even hot rodding, the way that we think of it, cars of the late 50s, early 60s, it seems like now people want to take what's left of that era and preserve it. So now you have cars of the 70s and 80s, maybe trucks or Jeeps, Broncos, things like that.
For a hefty price.
Sure. I mean, you'll pay up for a lot of these. But there are some that aren't as desirable that you can still pick up, or that fly under the radar that you can still pick up and restore and have a neat-looking hot rod.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and then again, you know, here's the other thing is that everybody's kind of got their own idea of what a hot rod is. And I still think that there are hot rodders out there that kind of adhere to those original principles of you know, what the kind of the original greaser group,
like,
I guess.
Or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think that and I say greaser, I don't mean that, you know, in a disparaging way. I mean, that's what they're called. But, like, you know, the gassers, you know, the people that were into street racing for real, or, you know, they were in these different car clubs. And I think everybody's got their own idea of what hot rodding is. Oh, what about rat rods? We didn't even talk about that. That's kind of, that's another thing that is kind of, has dropped off recently. You know, yeah. When we first started Car Stuff, that was a huge trend. And we had a show about rat rods. You know, we saw them at shows. We saw them everywhere. You know, it was just, it was an interesting trend. And I still think they're out there, but it seems like you just hear less and less about them now. It's like, there's something new, and I don't know what the new thing is yet. I got to kind of look into that, maybe.
Yeah, it would be interesting to explore that, though, for sure. Maybe we could get some feedback from folks about that.
Yeah, what's hot rodding in 2019, 2020, and you know, the next decade? Yeah, exactly. That might be interesting. We do have all of the social media contacts. If you want to contact us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, we are CarStuffHSW. And if you want to go to the show's website, of course, you probably already know this, but it's carstuffshow.com. And that is where you can find our archive of, almost 900 episodes at this point, including the one that we just recorded here with Kurt, and going back a couple of episodes with the new ones where it was just me struggling along alone. maybe don't listen to those first few. Or be kind if you do, knowing that it gets better, right? It did get better. You can go there, and I'm sure that if you search for any key term there that you find interesting, you're going to find something you like, because over the 900 episodes, we talked about just about everything. I mean, we really have, and we're going to continue that trend. And if you like what you're listening to, if you want, you can tell your friends and say, hey, you know, I've got this show that I used to listen to, and I listen again, and it's called Car Stuff, and, you know, I'm excited about it. We're happy that you're here right now. Of course, we're always trying to add new listeners, and would be happy to have any of your friends or family or anybody that you can recommend to come over and listen to the show. And last but not least, you can always leave reviews on Apple Podcasts or on the iHeartRadio app. And you can do that wherever you're listening to your podcasts. We're just excited to be back and excited about the direction that we're moving with this. And we hope you are too. And we're happy that you're listening. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Car Stuff is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.